And here is financial correspondent Kevin Palmer.
When political candidate Mitt Romney revealed his riches recently, the numbers stunned most Americans. In fact, this disclosure added fuel to a survey noting that increasing tensions between rich and poor are reaching their most intense levels in nearly a quarter of a century. Between the rich and the poor is a blanket phrase that can set fire to any conversation. Such spontaneous combustion usually leaves truth scattered in the wind. But there is much more common ground than meets the eye between people who have money and those who don't. Paradoxically, when we drill down into the wealth stratification of the top 1%, the group targeted by Occupy Wall Street, we find vast differences in the levels of richness. Understanding those similarities and differences may give the edge back to voters and force politicians to act for an even greater good. The result? A country less divided. Let me explain by sharing a recent experience. As I drove home after the holidays, I was astonished to see an Occupy Wall Street rally in a little sleepy Colorado town called Cortez. Population? Around 8,000. Moved by the activity I saw and the contagious enthusiasm of the nearly 50 participants, I blared my horn to feel part of the ensemble of supporters. A few blocks down the road, I pulled into a service station to gas up the guzzler and run my dog, who was equally excited by the Main Street event. Across the gas pump, a pickup truck with two 30-something males who'd just come from the rally pulled in to fill her up, too. "You're a believer in our cause," the driver smiled with appreciation. "Aren't you part of the 1%?" asked the other, more skeptical, older passenger. Looking down at my faded jeans and denim shirt, I was amazed he would think that. Yes, I'd come from a mountain known for affluent skiers, but in that town lived plenty of people who just chucked it all and existed day to day just to ski. Ironically, among most people I spoke with on my trip, I found a common thread regardless of their socioeconomics. They talked about how difficult it's been to keep up the economic standard they worked so hard for. This rang true for even those with the high spending lifestyle. And certainly, none of those so-called affluent people felt rich or entitled. I was curious to know what these guys in the pickup truck thought, and as our vehicles were filling up, we talked long enough for me to realize that while we were all seeing the same activity played out in that beautiful demonstration of freedom a few blocks away, we looked at it from different perspectives. The Occupy Wall Street movement, endorsed by most Americans, is a bright social revelation in a once apathetic and satiated society. Its supporters have finally raised their heads to declare, "We aren't happy deep down inside, and we're not going to take it anymore." But who really is the enemy? In America, we are finally waking up to the reality that working 9 to 5 no longer yields enough to keep our heads above water financially. As our leisure time has decreased, so has certain peace of mind. Still, we get bombarded 24/7 through our phones, computers, and big screens by ads from big corporations imploring us to spend more money on their products to supposedly make our lives better. How ironic. Our leisure time decreases while our discretionary income drowns in troubled financial waters we can hardly navigate, and big corporations are begging us to spend more. Yes, somebody is getting rich, but not anybody I know. Certainly not the so-called rich I've been researching through my behavioral economics firm, nor anybody I met skiing on the mountain. Which brought to mind two questions. Is the 1% really that rich, and are they to blame for making the rest of us miserable? The perspective gap I mentioned before and noticed between me and the guys in the pickup truck may help answer this question. Rich is often a function of what you have and, more importantly, what you feel you can get as it compares to someone else. So let's look at the levels of rich and set the record straight. First, most anybody can accumulate a net worth of $1 million, be labeled a millionaire, and be considered rich. I know this because I've interviewed thousands of millionaires who are average folks who just did above-average things to gain their wealth. Second, they too are disgusted by the same frustrations as those who aren't wealthy at all. That includes bankrupt corporate and government morality, as well as less free time to spend with their family because they need to work more to keep their incomes on par. They too feel mounting frustration because as the factors spiral out of control, they're losing their ability to address needed political and social change. Well, here's the 411. Within that wicked 1% who don't feel that rich exists another 1% who are bombastically rich by comparison. They feel rich and are rich, super rich, accounting for 36% of all the wealth in the world, according to a recent research being compiled by the SMA Institute. Only 100,000 or so people fit into this category, and one-third of them live in the United States. They have net worths of hundreds of millions of dollars with multiple million-dollar salaries to match. And yes, they influence most of the major decisions in the world. If you knew where they lived, it would probably take only a year to visit them all and tell them just what you think. After all, we see some of them every day on TV, in movies, or on sports field. Others avoid the media hype and are content to be masters behind our spending habits. They're sitting atop of the 500 biggest, or should I say behemoth, companies in the country. On balance, these ultra-rich, the 1% of the 1%, make $6 to $10 million a year, almost 10 times that of the average 1%er. Every time the stock market goes up, a measly 1%, their net worth likely increases by tens of thousands of dollars. Somehow, we collectively allow them such disproportionate wealth by our very consumer existence. The salaries and net worths of these surprisingly few extremely rich people seem unbelievable. I don't have to mention that their wealth buys them power that can significantly and single-handedly influence governments. This, by the way, may also answer the other nagging question from my Occupy Wall Street friends, asking why politicians are so inept at getting anything done that can have a substantial economic or social impact for the population at large. Well, look towards the banks as an example. A while ago, they were permitted by Congress to expand their investment reach. Subsequently, they made risky investments they didn't understand. When the large-scale mistakes nearly drove them out of business, politicians bailed them out with taxpayer dollars. Then when homeowners couldn't make their mortgage payments because of the economic crash caused by the banks foreclosed on the very taxpayers who paid for their rescue. To address the other question from my friends at the gas pump, when most millionaires are asked if they are rich, they repeat what the other 99% are saying. That is, they're tired of paying for self-interest decisions by big government and being bullied by companies that are so large they can treat almost everybody as insignificant. Yes, the time is right for protesting in the streets. Seeing these rallies in towns like Cortez so far from Wall Street proves that the many have suffered too much from the agendas of a very few. But let's keep in mind that the fault lies with the very, very few. Clearly, the ranks of those disgusted by the turn of both economic and political events reaches deep into the 1% who, for the most part, didn't all belong to that elite group to start. Instead, they're the people who ignited their version of the American dream with nothing except a will to work hard and persevere. As increasingly more supporters who finance America through spending and taxes swell the ranks of demonstrators, what will happen? We'll make needed changes to check the grinding greed of one-upmanship among those very few mega-millionaires and billionaires who play the game of amassing fortunes so large they could never spend them. We have a disdain for wrong edging out right, but having the privilege to be heard about correcting it has formed the foundation of this country. Through Occupy Wall Street's novel Pursuit of Justice, we hope there is issued a new personal empowerment of economic competition against elitist old-school capitalism. Then, through individual enterprise, any American can earn above-average lives. If Occupy Wall Street is to be a measured success, people need to be aware that we are all more alike than we realize. In recognizing this, we can reawaken the spirit of individual accomplishment. More than that, we can initiate a personal revolution in how we Americans see our financial potential. For Marketplace, I'm Kevin Palmer.